Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Arca Continental conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. Please note that this call is being recorded. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn it over to Melanie Carpenter of iAdvise Corporate Communications. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Jennifer. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the senior management team of Arca Continental to review the results of the first quarter of 2017. The earnings release went out this morning, and the long version is available on the company website as usual. It's arcacontal.com in the investor relations section. This call is also being transmitted via webcast. It's my pleasure to introduce our speakers. Joining us from Monterrey are Mr. Arturo Gutierrez, Deputy CEO, Mr. Emilio Marcos, Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Manuel Gutierrez, Director of Corporate Planning, as well as the Investor Relations team. And at this time, it's my pleasure to turn the call over for opening remarks to Arturo Gutierrez. So please go ahead, Arturo.
Thank you, Melanie, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today to discuss our first quarter performance. I am pleased to report that 2017 is off to a good start with sound operating results in the first quarter. We delivered another consecutive quarter of solid revenue and profit growth and extended volume value share gains in non-alcoholic ready-to-drink beverages. Total consolidated volume grew 2.2% in the quarter to reach 417 million unit cases, while total consolidated revenues increased 16.6%, reaching record sales of 24.8 billion pesos. As the results indicate, we continue to generate strong net price realization even in a sluggish consumer environment through enhanced revenue management capabilities and consolidation of our end-to-end total execution model. Consolidated EBITDA in the quarter rose close to 17%, reaching 5 billion pesos, expanding EBITDA margin to 20.2%, driven by cost efficiencies and operational improvements. This marks the 24th consecutive quarter of EBITDA growth and sets a new record for EBITDA margin in a first quarter since the merger that created Arca Continental. Despite macro challenges, we performed well, underscoring once again that the company is in a solid position to continue growing profitably. As part of the strategy to enhance our total beverage portfolio offering, this quarter we announced the acquisition of ADES from Unilever, jointly with the Coca-Cola Company and our bottler peers in Latin America. ADES is a leading soy-based beverage brand and is currently sold in Mexico, Argentina, and other countries in the region. We will leverage our robust capabilities to drive value and innovation on this new beverage platform, providing our consumers with a wider range of choices. In other news regarding our stock, Arca Continental was selected to become part of the FTSE for Good Emerging Index of the London Stock Exchange, which lists public companies that demonstrate a strong commitment to environmental, social, and corporate governance practices in emerging countries. This distinction is in addition to the inclusion of Arca Continental in the MSCI Global Sustainability Indexes since 2014. The participation in the Sustainability Index of the Mexican Stock Exchange for the past 5 years, and its certification as a socially responsible company for the 14th consecutive year by the Mexican Center for Philanthropy. Before I begin with a review of our operating highlights, I would like to give you a brief update on our new Coca-Cola franchise in the U.S. As you know, a few weeks ago, we announced the closing of the transaction with the Coca-Cola Company to become a franchise bottler in the U.S. Southwest region, comprised of Texas and parts of Oklahoma, New Mexico, and Arkansas. All the agreed closing conditions were fulfilled, including customary corporate and regulatory approvals. Therefore, as of April 1st, 2017, Arca Continental officially began operations in this territory across all market units, 9 production facilities, and 34 distribution centers. We are proud to report that all plants and distribution centers are producing and distributing products normally. Our focus on serving our customers is on track, and we've met our sales plan for the first weeks of operation. We have also received positive feedback from associates regarding this new sales tools, systems, and infrastructure that was deployed. This outstanding outcome resulted from the collaboration of a committed team of people from Arca Continental, the Coca-Cola Company, and CCR, working together under a disciplined methodology to ensure a timely and seamless transition of unprecedented scale in the U.S. Coca-Cola refranchising process. As we rapidly progress in the stabilization and integration phase, we are assembling the various teams that will focus on delivering the value creation opportunities that we have identified. As we announced last quarter, we expect to realize annualized synergies of approximately $60 to $80 million within a three-year period. Now let's review the performance across our operations in more detail, beginning with North America. We delivered another quarter of sequential volume growth in Mexico. Total volume grew 5.3% in the first quarter after a strong 11.5% in last year's same quarter and marking the seventh consecutive quarter of growth. Sparkling category rose 4%, while personal water and still beverages grew double digits, up 11.6% and 11.2% respectively. Jug water volume posted 6.3% growth, confirming our position as the leading brand in our territories. As a result, total net revenues in North America rose 14.3% in the quarter to reach 13.8 billion pesos. Average price per case in our beverage business in Mexico rose 9.7%, reaching 55.18 pesos. EBITDA in North America increased 9% to 2.7 billion pesos, representing a margin of 19.6%. Among the highlights, Coca-Cola Sin Azúcar was launched in Mexico this quarter. This new sugar-free version has a renovated formula that tastes even more like original Coca-Cola, but without sugar. Preliminary results have been very positive. Just in the first month, we have reached over 65% coverage in the traditional channel in our territories. Moving now to our operations in South America, which include our business in Argentina, Ecuador, and Peru, volume in the first quarter declined 2.8%, driven by volume drops in Argentina and Ecuador, stemming from the continued economic challenges in both countries, which was partially offset by growth in Peru. Total revenues increased 11.6% in the quarter, reaching 10.9 billion pesos, and EBITDA rose 28% to 2.3 billion pesos for the quarter, representing a margin of 20.9%. We have doubled down on execution, accelerating deployment of our PAC commercial model and strengthening operational processes while driving affordability by expanding returnable presentations. In Argentina, volume in the first quarter declined 2.5%. Volume confirmed the overall sequential improvement trend from the second, third, and fourth quarters of last year, when the decline was 15.7%, 8.5%, and 6.4% respectively. The Argentinian economy is expected to rebound this year as last year's policy changes started feed through. We will further perfect our enhanced point-of-sale execution capabilities while focusing on returnable formats and increased cooler coverage. In addition, we are finalizing all preparations to incorporate to our supply chain the sugar produced by the cane sugar mill acquired last year. This investment will play a critical role to mitigate inflationary pressures in this critical raw material. In Ecuador, volume was down 12.8% in the first quarter. We continue driving innovation and evolving our portfolio to offer more low and no calorie options. We focused our efforts in making these products more affordable to our consumers. In fact, as of the end of March, our low calorie product mix reached a 42.5% record high. We've achieved these results because our operating approach in this environment is to execute against what we can control and retool our price pack architecture to cope with volatility and uncertainty. Moving over to our value-added dairy business in Ecuador, Tonicorp posted a low single-digit sales decline. The slowdown of the Ecuadorian economy has severely affected the dairy business in the country as a whole, with double-digit revenue drops. Tonicorp captured additional market share gains across all key categories, particularly yogurt, flavored milk, and ice cream, driven by point-of-sale execution, product innovation, and affordability. In the first quarter, we added almost 2,500 new customers in the traditional channel, and significantly expanded product coverage. Our portfolio of key SKUs is available in more than 75% of our customer base. Moving on to Peru, and before we review last quarter's results, I would like to take a moment to address recent weather-related events across the country, particularly in the last 2 weeks of March. As you may be aware, the sudden and abnormal warming of Pacific waters off Peru, known as Coastal El Niño, caused a state of emergency in several areas due to severe rain, with landslides and raging rivers devastating the homes of more than 150,000 people. More than 750 miles of highway road linking the interior of the country to Lima were severely damaged, affecting overall logistics and distribution. I want to take this opportunity to thank our associates for their amazing work in volunteering to help the affected communities, providing bottled water and donations. Despite these adverse conditions impacting our supply chain, we were able to deliver solid operational and financial results. Total volume in the first quarter grew 1.6%, reaching 87 million unit cases, cycling a strong 8.3% growth in the same quarter last year. Net revenues increased 26.2% in the quarter as we continue deploying our ACT commercial model and improving execution at the point of sale. We keep bolstering media consumption in the non-calorie category with an affordable pricing strategy with a new 300 ml non-returnable presentation at an entry price point of one sol. As a result, the non-calorie category has sustained a double-digit growth rate in the last two quarters. We're promoting affordability with returnable glass bottle initiatives and smaller size packages tied to the right price points. To conclude our operations review, let me turn to our complementary businesses consisting of snacks in Mexico, U.S., and Ecuador, our vending machine operations, and our exports division. Bocados delivered low single-digit sales growth in the quarter as we enhanced execution at the point of sale, leveraging our diverse and affordable product portfolio, deploying additional distribution routes. We are moving swiftly in our plan to expand market coverage. Just in the first quarter, we attracted over 5,000 new customers. An enabler of this expansion will be the new Bocados plant in Querétaro. The first production line is up and running. This new facility will help achieve operational and distribution efficiencies while optimizing freight costs and increasing production capacity to accelerate our geographic expansion plans in Mexico. Wise Snacks faced a challenging first quarter, posting single-digit sales decline due to retailer volatility and overall category pressure. We continue expanding its distribution footprint by adding new chain and convenience outlets. Key customer wins include expanding our Si Señor brand into new outlets across the U.S. southern region, along with opening new convenience and independent grocery chains on the East Coast with the Wise brand. In time for the start of the baseball season, Wise launched new Cheese Doodles flavors co-branded with the New York Mets to leverage our long-standing sponsorship. Furthermore, Wise became the official salty snack sponsor of the Atlanta Braves at their new stadium. We launched three new items under the Bravos brand in a co-branding with the Braves. We will also accelerate plans to capture value creation opportunities between Wise and our new Coca-Cola Southwest Beverages operation. Inalecsa delivered another quarter of single-digit revenue growth, capturing volume and value share in salty snacks, driven by a disciplined revenue management strategy, a refined execution at the point of sale, and innovation in product and packaging. In the first quarter, Inalecsa posted 19% volume growth in potato chips, while capturing the highest market share in this category. In addition, this quarter we launched a new campaign to refresh the brand's image and target a much broader consumer base. Exports of Topo Chico mineral water to the U.S. continued its outstanding performance, delivering another quarter of double-digit sales growth. Net revenues in the first quarter rose 26%, driven by attractive market activations in major music festivals, sports, and cultural events, such as the iconic South by Southwest Conference and Festivals, and the PGA Dell Match Play Tournament, both in Austin, Texas. Moreover, Topo Chico is now served at over 160 Taco Cabana restaurants across Texas, Oklahoma, and New Mexico. To conclude the review of operations, our vending machine business has made steady progress both in beverages and in snacks. Sales volume increased mid-single digits in the first quarter, achieving 10 consecutive quarters of growth. We will expand the knowledge developed over the last 10 years in Mexico and look for synergy opportunities across the recently acquired franchises in Peru and the U.S., thus capitalizing on the information technology tools to expand remote unit management, maintenance, and overall administration capabilities. I will now turn the call to Emilio to provide you with more details on our financial results.
Thank you, Arturo. As always, we appreciate your participation in this conference call to review Arca Continental's financial performance during the first 3 months of the year. Arca Continental began 2017 posting strong double-digit growth in revenues and EBITDA. North America continued its solid top-line performance, combining volume increases with an effective price strategy, while South America had a margin expansion mostly from our operations in Argentina and Peru, supported by a better cost structure and stronger pricing initiatives to maintain affordability for our consumers. Consolidated revenues grew 16.6% in the first quarter, mainly from our revenue growth management initiatives, helped by a low single-digit volume increase. Comparable currency neutral net revenues increased 11.1%. North America continues reporting good volume performance and a 9.7% price per unit case increase year over year to reach revenue growth of 14.3% in the quarter. In South America, sales increased 19.6% in the period thanks to a better price pack architecture to push single serve formats, which now contribute more than 30% of our total sales mix in the region. Cost of goods sold increased 16.3%, essentially from the depreciation of the peso and higher sugar prices year over year. Nevertheless, thanks to our strategy to increase price to overcome our internal inflation, we were able to maintain gross margin at the same level of last year. SG&A expenses were up 17.5% in the quarter, maintaining similar levels as a percentage of sales as last year, essentially from higher fuel prices, facilities, and distribution equipment maintenance, combined with the Mexican peso devaluation against the South American currencies. However, we reiterate our commitment to keep a strict cost and expense control to maintain margins. Operating income increased 9.5% in the first 3 months, for a margin of 14% affected by non-recurring expenses generated from the U.S. transaction. Consolidated EBITDA increased 16.8% to 5 billion pesos, reaching a 20.2% margin, slightly higher than first quarter of 2016. Comparable currency neutral EBITDA increased 11.2%. In the quarter, the income tax provision was 885 million pesos compared to 942 million pesos in 2016. The effective tax rate for the quarter was 31%. Comprehensive cost of financing during the quarter increased 635 million from 130 million, driven by exchange gains from last year and higher interest expenses due to a debt increase during the quarter as a consequence of the corporate restructuring process. Net income decreased 7.6% to 1.7 billion pesos in the quarter, representing a margin of 7%, explained by higher non-recurring expenses and compressive cost of financing. Our total CapEx investment in 2017 will be around 10 billion pesos, including our new U.S. operation, allocated towards improving our production, distribution, and execution capabilities to extract value from the market opportunities, as all funded by a healthy cash flow generation. Furthermore, a dividend of 2 pesos per share, totaling 3.5 billion pesos, was approved at our annual shareholders meeting yesterday to be paid the second week of May. This amount represents a 39% payout ratio, above to our dividend policy of at least 30%. As of March 31st, 2017, we had a cash position of 15.7 billion pesos and debt of 42.8 billion pesos, meaning a 1.3 times net debt to EBITDA ratio. We expect to reduce this ratio to 1.1 times by the end of the year without considering any M&A activity. We have new challenges to face this year, including the integration of the beverages operation in U.S. However, this positive start provides us confidence and motivation to maintain favorable results, always supported by our execution capabilities, a reference in the Coca-Cola system, and our proven financial discipline. And with that, I'll turn it back to Arturo.
Thank you, Emilio. In summary, while the year started with several external challenges, Arca Continental delivered another solid performance. We are encouraged by the prospects of our expansion into the U.S., which has energized the entire organization to continue evolving into a world-class bottler and delivering products to our customers and consumers with the highest standards. As we look ahead to this summer, we have a clear roadmap for growth, productivity and investment program that is driving efficiencies, and we are well aligned and poised for improving execution. Despite the prolonged volatility of the financial markets and a weak economic climate in some of our markets, we are confident that we have the right strategies, capabilities, and most importantly, a talented group of associates to continue delivering profitable growth over the long term. We are confident that we will generate consistent quality, organic growth, and we will continue seeking opportunities for regional expansion and product diversification. Thank you for your support and confidence. Operator, we are now ready for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the 1 key on your touch-tone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order they are received, and if at any time you wish to remove yourself from the questioning queue, you may do so by dialing star 2. Again, ladies and gentlemen, that is star 1 to ask a question. Our first question comes from Lauren Torres with UBS.
Yes, hi, good morning, everyone. My question's on the U.S. Being that you're there a month, I know that's a short time, but you know, early read into that market, you know, what you've observed over this time frame. You know, you've talked about a synergy target, the ability to realize that target, you know, what's kind of short term, what's longer term, and as you disclose this CapEx spend, a quarter of your spend to the U.S., how will that be directed? So, you know, once again, an overview on the U.S. And potential this year, and you know, longer term, but I think more short term. I'm asking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren. Well, we're very proud of what has been accomplished in the U.S. so far. It's only been a few weeks, but our main focus in throughout the transition is basically day one, having a seamless transition, considering. The unprecedented scale of the effort. This is the largest transition in this franchising phase in the U.S. And at the same time that we were incorporating the business to Arca Continental, we were also adopting a new IT platform, and we were doing that in a big bang format, which was you know, several challenges at the same time. So. We also are in the process of obviously creating a new culture and defining our operating model. So just to give you an idea of the scale, you know, we had around 1,900 tasks and milestones. We had to train 6,000 associates for that day one, and we had about 34,000 hours of training. So the indicators after we have the cutover date were very encouraging. We had very few incidences. We had a very high rate of pricing accuracy. So we moved very quickly into the stabilization of the business, which was the first target. And most of all, we had a very motivated team for solving issues. At the same time, the business continues to operate and continues to grow, which is most important. There were no major disruptions in the business throughout the, you know, the months in we were transitioning, because we had a big number of of people in the team from CCR, from the Southwest Business Unit, participating in the effort. So first of all, it was important to maintain the focus on our customers and our market. So that was accomplished. Also, we had a very seamless transition in terms of organization, which is a key element. We confirmed the leader for the organization, the new CEO. We have also defined what is the new leadership team for the organization. So they're all working now as a team. And this last few weeks, we have seen continued growth in the business, which is very encouraging. In terms of the CapEx, we have been making sure that the business continued to operate and that we had our plans for CapEx approved for the second quarter and second half of the year. And truly, it is not very different to what we have in other Coke operations. You know, the main areas in which we invest are similar. Even the rate of the CapEx as a percentage of revenues is similar to our other businesses. And as we continue to stabilize the business, our next step is to have a more detailed plan on the synergies. We had restricted access to information of the business during the transition. And now that we have, you know, full access of all the operational information, we are preparing a detailed plan with, you know, dates, people that will be accountable, specific projects and milestones. And we would be prepared to provide some additional details on that in the future. But we have confirmed the expected annual synergies in the range of $60 to $80 million by year three. And the main sources of synergies are the ones that we've mentioned, not only in our supply chain and some of the savings. And some projects, I have to say, were already being considered by management, and we will be supporting those value-creating initiatives. I would say that we were very aligned to the mindset that management had before we took over. And with respect to commercial synergies, we acknowledge that there are differences in the market, and we've identified, obviously, those. But also there are many similarities, and especially in connection with our basic capabilities. So we can definitely contribute. We can combine best practices with the local talent. So it's not only about, you know, changing capabilities and processes. We have to adopt new ones. But it's also about execution, about incentives, about empowering people, about building a strong culture. So we're confident about our plan, and by, you know, probably the end of second quarter, we'll have a more detailed synergy plan that we will be executing in the next few years.
Great. And I guess that 13.5% EBITDA margin target for the U.S. is still intact as far as what you've seen so far?
Excuse me, can you repeat that?
The EBITDA margin, I think Pancho has talked about, you know, around 13.5% or so in the U.S. is a fair number. Is that still fair?
Yes. Correct.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Isabel Simonato with Bank of America.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for the call. I have two questions. First, considering that sugar prices internationally had a pretty good big sell-off and the peso also appreciated a little bit, how are you seeing costs for Mexico for the rest of the year? If you could tell us how much you already hedged on that. And second, looking at the performance in South America and the beginning of the macro recovery in Argentina, what can we expect in terms of volumes for that region in 2017? Thank you.
Thank you, Isabella. Probably I can address the second part of your question, the second question in connection with South America, and then I will let Emilio answer the question about the cost of goods sold in Mexico. In Argentina, in South America in general, you know, in our three operations, we have different macroeconomic environments. Obviously, Peru is doing much better. We have a growing economy. The challenges have been in Ecuador and in Argentina. And both of those countries have been, suffering from slowdown. Argentina, we have a more positive outlook for the year. We estimate that the economy is going to grow in 2017. led by, you know, some public sector investments and exports, and continue to grow in the years to come, 2018 and 2019. In the meantime, we have certainly operated under very challenging conditions, especially inflation. To compensate for that, we have been able to maintain price increases above inflation, and that has given us a very good profitability for business in the first quarter and also last year, considering the conditions. We have focused on returnable packages. We have focused on magic price points to guarantee affordability, and we have expanded our sparkling portfolio. We have introduced brands more aggressively, like Crush, in some of the more price-sensitive regions in Argentina to gain share, in particular those areas in the north of Argentina. And most of all, we continue to expand our execution model, which the whole idea is you focus on the variables that depend on the operation, that make a difference, and you keep track of those so that when in Mexico we had the taxes and, you know, the industry was contracting, we were able to identify things that would, you know, give us a leading position when the situation was better. And that certainly happened in Mexico, and we are seeing the benefits years after that. In the case of Argentina, for example, we've continued to ensure cold beverage availability. Even under these conditions, we continue to invest in cooler coverage. We now have a coverage of 58%, which is, you know, continuing to grow. And we also focus on a balanced price architecture to compensate high inflation, to maintain balance across the channels, to leverage our returnable package availability, which, you know, is a very important tool to maintain affordability in our strategy. So all in all, that has allowed us, even though the volume has declined, to have a good profitability on the business, to achieve a good share of value in the market for NARTD, and at the same time maintain an efficiency and a discipline in our costs. In the case of Ecuador, the challenging situation probably will prevail for a longer time. And if you see our margins in Ecuador, I think they are remarkable under the conditions. We've been very innovative in terms of expanding our portfolio through different beverages to have more focus on the non-calorie options that also give us additional profitability for the overall portfolio. And Ecuador is now one of the examples around the Coca-Cola system for the growth in the mix of non-calorie products. It's, you know, more than 40% and getting closer to 50% in our portfolio. That has the two benefits. On the one hand, it promotes the reduced calorie options for consumers and also increases profitability for business, overcoming the impact of the new tax imposed. So in terms of volume for the year, this is going to be certainly a challenging year. We expect to continue improving quarter by quarter. This was the month of April is the last month in Ecuador in which we are comparing to the pre-tax situation in the country. So the comps are going to be different for the remainder of the year. And in the case of Argentina, as you see, every quarter has been better than the previous quarter in terms of the comparison with the previous year. So we expect growth to resume in Argentina even faster for the remainder of the year, although we, you know, we're still dealing with the decline in the first quarter. So I don't know if that gives you a general idea of the situation in those countries in South America. If it does, I can pass it along to Emilio.
No, that was very, very clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Arturo. Well, regarding raw material prices in Mexico for this year, as you know, fructose prices have been really stable in the past 2 years in dollars, and we have hedged all of our needs of fructose for this year at the same price as we had last year in dollars. For sugar, as you also know, last year we had a very high increase in prices. So The last increase was the last quarter of last year, so this year we don't expect any additional increase. So we believe that sugar prices will be really stable during the year in Mexico. And PET prices, we do expect a little increase, very small increase in dollars during the year. And regarding the dollar hedging, we still see some volatility in the market. So in order to be in line with our disciplined hedging strategy, we have already hedged most of our needs for the rest of the year at a very, I would say, a comfortable exchange rate below 20 pesos. So with the operation in U.S., our natural hedges will increase. So this year, with 9 months of the U.S. operation, since we're starting the 1st of April, about 30% of our EBITDA and 40% of our sales will be in dollars. So we feel really comfortable on that also.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Isabella.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alex Robarts with Citi.
Yes. Hi. Good morning, everybody. Thank you. I wanted to go back to Mexico. I think what was intriguing for us is you know, this very solid mid-single digit volume growth, and comparatively to the other bottlers in Mexico, this is a strong number. What was remarkable, it seemed, it was about a quarter of your growth coming from the water and still beverages in the quarter, you know, both posting double digit volume growth. What was the kind of drivers, what were the drivers around this very heady growth in water and still beverages? Can you help us understand, perhaps from the marketing standpoint, were there some campaigns, were there some launches? That would be the first question, just to understand that piece.
Thank you, Alex. Good morning. Well, yes, certainly this quarter was very solid for Mexico, and if you consider that the first quarter of 2016, we had a growth of 13% in volume, and today we're here standing on the seventh consecutive quarter with a result of more than 5% in volume, and even more remarkable if we consider the price increases that were made recently. So I think that reinforces our growth story for Mexico, and that, you know, it's a growth story that would apply to any of our operations. And that this is truly based on improvement of key operational indicators. And that's why we insist on our ACT model, our total execution model, and the deployment of that in other of our operations. And that means effectiveness in our route to market indicators, sales visits, coverage of our strategic SKUs, which we call the unforgivable SKUs, the tracking of out of stocks, the cooler strategy indicators, obviously the execution score, and many others based on, I would say, more sophisticated analytics of the market also. Those fundamentals are based on those. And certainly that has helped, you know, across channels and across categories. I would say even though stills are growing more, obviously those categories many times have a bigger opportunity. They are underdeveloped in many cases as compared to our sparkling categories. But if you see growth across channels and across categories, I would say it's a very healthy growth. I mean, sparkling continues to grow and still obviously grow more. You know, a good example of that is, you know, energy drinks, for example, because we launched Monster last year. We did not have Monster in the first quarter of 2016, and that, you know, it's a growth in terms of percentages, you know, it's probably more than 200%, but it compares to the energy portfolio that we had before. Powerade continues to be, you know, a great story for growth. We we continue to grow volume, and we continue to gain share, and we gain share in the best way to do it, which is increasing the size of the pie, expanding the category. We do that through brand availability, through our comprehensive strategy to increasing availability, especially in traditional trade. We continue to increase coverage of the stills portfolio in the traditional trade. So that, I think, is a key element and something that we continue to track because it expands the category, and it happens in almost all of the categories that we are commercializing in fruit drinks and juices and nectars, energy, of course, the coverage of energy drinks in the case of Munster is only 18%, and our target, short-term target, is 25%. Flavored water is another very important driver, where we did have also launches, and it grew 30% in the first quarter. And we have identified that the joint availability of certain packages is key. So we increased the coverage also to 46% in flavored water. And purified water, again, the main driver, if you ask me, would be the traditional channel for purified water. We gained market share, and we grew our volume 11% in that channel. So I think all in all, it's a very healthy growth. Certainly stills drive more because they have more opportunity, but we have solid growth in sparkling as well.
Okay, very clear. No, that is helpful indeed. Okay, so the second one really relates to the margin pickup in South America. I mean, 130 basis points is the bigger number than we'd expected. But is it fair to assume that this is coming mostly from Peru? And if that is the case, if perhaps Peru was the main margin driver in South America, how much of the 13 million in synergies can be used to explain that? Have those started? I know it was to be implemented this year, but those packaging related synergies, have they started yet or not? So the second question really is just around the margin pickup. What was the country that was driving that, and specifically on Peru, if you could talk to the margin outlook there and synergies. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Well, certainly we had very satisfactory margin performance in all three countries in South America. I'll let Emilio address that. Just to refer to your question about synergies in Peru, yes, synergies continue to deliver and profitability in our margins. We have a record margin in the first quarter in terms of EBITDA margin. This is even beyond the target that we had initially when we had our business plan for Peru years back. And it is based on a number of initiatives that we've been talking about in other calls, and that relate to our supply chain, but also relate to our capability to increase prices, our revenue management. So it's a combination of some of those more fundamental core capabilities of business, and then some of the projects, particularly packaging, as you mentioned, and many others in our operational expense in Peru. And the good thing is that we have still some initiatives underway in Peru that will continue to provide value as we go on in 2017. But to talk in general about margins in South America, I'll let Emilio answer.
Thank you, Arturo. Thank you, Alex, for your question. Well, we expanded, as you said, around 140 basis points, the EBITDA margin in South America. And mainly was driven by different factors. Number one, as Arturo already mentioned, the result of the very good results of the synergy plan in Peru, which were higher than even that we expected. The other factor that it's important in basically all of our operations is the very efficient price strategy that we have implemented in all the countries. That includes new packages protecting affordability for the consumer, of course, considering the situation, the economic situation in Argentina and Ecuador. And the other aspect that we also take care of very carefully is the very strict expense control that we also implement in all of our operations. So we will keep all these initiatives and strategies to keep margins. Basically, the improvements were mainly in Peru and Argentina. Ecuador were kind of flat margins, but the two ones were Peru and Argentina, basically.
Okay, yeah, that's very clear. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Pedro Leduc with J.P. Morgan.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for taking the question. Two quick ones. First, the non-operating expenses, 249 million pesos. If you could explain us a little bit more why they came about. And then second, the net financial results line, excluding then the exchange rate, smaller number, but the net financial figure 625, if that is a recurring run rate we should model for the other quarters in the year. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you for your question, Pedro. I'll take that, Arturo.
Sure.
Do you mind? Well, basically, they're connected. The net income decrease are basically due to two factors. Number one is the non-recurring expenses that you, as you also mentioned, due to the Coca-Cola Southwest transaction. That includes, among others, the restructuring, the legal expenses, accounting, due diligence, et cetera. So there's still more of these kind of expenses for next quarter. However, will be less than this quarter. But it's important to mention that the total expenses for the transaction will be less than 1% of the transaction value, which is much lower than the benchmark of this kind for this kind of deals. So again, the net income was impacted for these non-recurrent expenses, and the other one is a higher comprehensive cost of financing, basically because one, we have an important difference. Last year we have a gain of 287 million pesos exchange gain generated last year. And this year we have higher interest expenses because the additional debt that we have because of the U.S. transaction. So these two factors impacted the net income. But however, we were able to increase around 9.5. Our operating income and around 7% the EBITDA. I think it's important to mention about the debt increase now that it's one of the factors that was impacting the net income. Well, as you know, this acquisition of Coca-Cola Southwest Beverages implied the creation of a new subsidiary that we call AC Bebidas, to which we transfer all the assets related to the beverage business in all the countries. We also we contributed all the assets, but it was necessary to do the same with the associated debt. So we need to put all the debt in AC Bebidas. For this reason, AC Bebidas, since AC Bebidas pays some of the shares of the assets of Bebidas to AC Holding, AC Bebidas contracted new loans to pay AC for these assets. So we kept the debt at AC Bebidas level, but the cash we still have it at AC Holding. Okay, so At the end, since we kept the cash at the consolidated level, the leverage ratio still the same, around 1.3 times net debt to EBITDA ratio. That's why it didn't increase, because we keep the cash. At this moment, what we're doing is we're in the process of refinancing around 17 billion pesos with the most efficient long-term structure. So we will basically restructure that short-term debt to long-term. So that's basically what had impacted our interest expenses increase.
Okay, yes. Thank you for the clear answer. So on the non-recurring expenses, we should see a little bit more in the second quarter, but less than this one. And then the interest expense line, 625, that should then be a more recurring figure, at least until we refinance it. No, that's the right
thing. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Very useful.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Martha Shelton with BBVA.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. It revolves around Mexico and the formidable growth in average price per unit case at near 9.7%. How do you feel about pricing currently in Mexico, and are you considering taking even more pricing as we go into the later half of the year? And just to, just to get a sense for what percentage of that is direct pricing, and what percentage of that is coming from mix shift. Thanks so much.
Hi, Martha, and welcome back.
Thank you.
Well, certainly we had a good quarter in terms of our price comparison in Mexico. We had increased prices in November and in February as well. And a few comments in connection to that. First, we did have, direct price increases in our overall portfolio. So it's a lot about, prices that increases that were implemented rather than just a significant change in mix. We grew across categories, I would say, in a very healthy way, as I mentioned. But it is a combination always of our price points and our ability to be more effective in terms of discounts. We continue to have a better management of our discounts in our operation. It's mostly about price increases, but I did want to mention that because we used to have discounts maybe 3 years back at about 5.1%. We are currently in about 3.6, and that's even a slight improvement as compared to the previous year. So that's another key element. What we continue to do is increase prices, I would say, with more information or with more deep analytics of the market. And that's helped us, capture more value without, sacrificing the growth in terms of volume and especially our share in the market. So we measure not only our share of volume, certainly, but the share of value is now a more relevant metric if you consider that. And of course, we try to identify our share of profits, which is maybe even more important. So for the remainder of the year, we see that there are selective opportunities. Most of the price increases were already implemented. If you consider that it's, more than 9% quarter by quarter. Also, as you compare with price increases that were implemented last year, and you compare the curves for the remainder of the year, we're not going to end at 9, but certainly we're going to be above inflation, even now that inflation in Mexico, is higher than was originally expected. So we're confident about not only where we're going to end up this year, but our revenue management capabilities. I think we have really improved that over the last maybe 3 years in terms of pricing and management of discounts.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Martha.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Antonio Gonzalez with Credit Suisse.
Hi, good morning, Arturo and team. Thanks for taking my question and congrats on the results. I have just two quick follow-ups. The first one is on the debt explanation that Emilio just gave. I fully understand the, spirit of the debt relocation. You're basically injecting, so to speak, leverage into AC Bebidas to keep the overall leverage constant at 1.3 times. But if that is the case, you know, the total debt level shouldn't have moved that much. So I just want to understand, is there higher short-term debt at the moment that is causing the higher interest expense? Or given that the overall leverage ratio is constant, why would the interest expense increase so much? That's the first part of that question. And then secondly, I just wanted to understand, it's my understanding that the Texas territories and the rest of the U.S. Territories that you have as well will come with some net debt of roughly $415 million. So I just wanted to understand if that debt has been issued already, and if so, what's the cost of debt, or whether that's going to be a subsequent event after closing.
Thank you, Antonio, for your question. Yes, we had an increase, a debt increase, short and long term. You can see that in the balance sheet for 11.5 billion pesos. Additional debt from December to March, total 11.5. So that's the reason why we have a higher interest expense this quarter. And most of that debt was is a short term debt. So that's why I mentioned that at this moment we're in the process of refinancing around 17 billion out of the 18.3 that we have in a short term debt bank debt in our balance sheet to long term. So and all of this debt is at the ACB EBITDA's level. But as you can see also in our cash and equivalent, we have an increase. So most of that additional debt, it's in our balance sheet, around 10 billion pesos additional cash. And that's most of that, it's at the, around 80% of that, it's at the holding level. So that we have already the cash in order to pay the seguros at maturity when and the interest expenses for that debt. There is a dividend coming next month of 3.5 billion pesos that was approved yesterday. And while the remaining cash will give us the flexibility to keep looking for any new acquisition or M&A opportunities.
Okay. And regarding the Texas debt, Emilio, has it been raised already? And would you be able to comment on what's the terms of that debt?
Well, there's still not here because we haven't consolidated the results of, Southwest. So it's not. Once we consolidate, we will have the debt that it's going to be in Coca-Cola Southwest Beverages, and at the beginning will be a short-term debt also, because we will need to find the best way to refinance that debt.
Okay, that's clear. And just secondly, if I may, very quickly, perhaps for Arturo. I also wanted to come back to the strong volume growth in Mexico, and I wanted to see if, first, I don't know if you can quantify what's the growth contribution in total from the higher coverage that you have across the Steel's portfolio, right? Santa Clara and Monster and Powerade and so on. Obviously, in some of those brands, you've been talking about increased coverage for a number of quarters already. So I don't know if perhaps you can quantify what's the overall contribution to growth, and just qualitatively, Arturo, in your mind, which one of these opportunities is the largest volumetrically in terms of where you are today compared to where you could take the coverage in the next couple of years?
Yes. Well, we don't have a precise number about, you know, how coverage relates. We do have a deeper analysis of the opportunities in the market, but we have identified so many variables that it's hard to, you know, isolate a single one. There are execution elements in the market. There are, promotional activities. that are, you know, route to market, for example, indicators have proven to us that they have a significant impact on our sales volume, like how many customers are we visiting and how is the interaction with each of those customers. And obviously, you know, cooler space and especially the combination of the right SKUs in the market. As in the case of water, if we have the two key SKUs, it's much better than just having coverage in one of them. So it's hard to estimate. We do believe that all those execution elements account for more than half of the growth or make a difference more than half, aside from many other issues that relate to, you know, the economy, even weather-related issues that we continue to track down. And the opportunities in coverage, I would say, exist across almost all of the categories. And especially if you go into detail about some particular packages in categories. So we have opportunities, even in brand Coca-Cola for coverage. One huge opportunity would be Coca-Cola sin azúcar now to increase the coverage in the key packages for that segment, which is going to drive growth, even though it's within the so-called mature categories in our market. In the case of stills, I would say that we have opportunity in all of them, especially I'm talking about traditional, the up and down the street market. And it reinforces the story about the opportunities that are there in the market. And it's not necessarily about volume sometimes now. If you consider the example of Monster, I think it's hard to compare the unit cases. If you see the price per case in Monster, it's completely different to our traditional business. But profitability, is the key driver there. Same thing with Santa Clara. And as we continue to expand Santa Clara, which I did not mention before, but Santa Clara, is growing 40% year over year, and it's growing in all of the categories. Probably the volume will not make a big difference at this point, but we certainly are building our capabilities and the strength of a brand in a category that already exists, and that we have, I would say, still a limited coverage. If you consider 18% of coverage, or sometimes 30% in some areas for milk or for flavored milk, that should be mostly universal. So and especially a product that is preferred by consumers. But again, if you consider Santa Clara from a purely volume standpoint, maybe it's not going to be very exciting considering the overall mix, but it brings a lot of profitability. Maybe flavored milk is one of the most profitable categories in our portfolio, if not the most.
Thank you so much, Arturo.
Okay, thank you, Tony.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Luca Cipicia with Goldman Sachs.
Hi, good morning and good afternoon. Thanks. Most of my questions have been answered, but I just wanted to ask a couple of follow-ups. First, if maybe you can give us an update on where the current penetration of the, say, low-calorie sin azúcar portfolio stands in Mexico, just to understand, the progresses and where you see that going, but also just the level that it is today. And across the portfolio. And then secondly, just to confirm going forward how the U.S. operations will be reported, if you will separate from the second quarter them as a standalone or rather we'll see them in your current sort of North America disclosure, just for us to model and know what to expect going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Luca. Well, let me address briefly the first part. I let Emilio answer the second question. We launched Coca-Cola Sin Azúcar just recently in our market, but the results so far are very promising. As I mentioned, it has a mix of about 1.4% versus total beverages, but that is significantly more than what Coke Zero had in our portfolio. Remember that in Mexico, Coca-Cola Light is very strong. So that is our number one no-calorie product. So in the case
combined, how much would they account combined? well, diet?
They're still less than 10%, right. You know, but so I believe there's a big opportunity there to grow, especially if you see what we've done in Ecuador. As I mentioned, in Ecuador, our no calories is more than 43%. It's getting to 50. I think it's remarkable, and it tells you something about, you know, the flavor and how it is so similar to the original Coca-Cola, this new renovated formula, and that is why we're very optimistic about the potential of Coca-Cola sin azúcar in Mexico. But mix, you know, it's at that level, but certainly it's too soon to tell. It's just been a few weeks that it's been out in the market. We don't even have the whole portfolio of packages in all of our markets. So this is a very early stage, judging from what we've seen in a market where this has, you know, been out for more for almost a year. There's a lot of opportunity for growth, and especially for growth that is new consumers coming to the brand rather than just cannibalizing, you know, our own volume from other categories. So that is where we stand right now. And coverage is you know, also at very good levels, 65%.
Great. Thank you.
I let Emilio take care of it.
Oh, yes. Thank you. It's really a quick answer. Well, the operation in the U.S., Coca-Cola Southwest Beverages, will become the second largest operation in terms of sales for Arca Continental. So its results should be reported separately. So we just need to find out the way to structure all the reporting, but at the end, the U.S. operation will be in a separate reporting.
We should expect a similar structure, similar disclosure of what you gave us today for the other regions, I would assume.
Yes, that's correct.
All right. Thank you. Look forward to
Thank
that.
You,
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alvaro Garcia with BTG.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the call. Congrats on the results. Two questions. First, on Ecuador, now that we're about to lap sort of the impact from the excise tax, what are your expectations for volumes going forward for the rest of this year? We know activity remains weak. Just your thoughts there would be great. That's my first question. And my second question is a follow-up, once again, on the debt, on the balance sheet. On the debt issue that's been discussed, you have 43 billion pesos of gross debt as of the first quarter, and you've mentioned you have this large cash balance. What's unclear to me is how much of that gross debt of the 43 billion pesos you'll pay off throughout the rest of the year. It's clear to me you have the dividend payment, et cetera, but I know you're going to refinance a big chunk of the short-term debt, but how much of this 43 billion pesos, given that cash balance, will you pay off, which will help us sort of project interest expense going forward? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Alvaro. Let me talk about Ecuador first. And, well, certainly the tax was imposed May last year. So we're still recycling the last few months of the volumes of the pre-tax situation in the country. And it was, as you know, a significant impact on volumes because of the price increases. And that combined with the situation of the economy, I mean the contraction of the economy and the disposable income that is available for consumers. So that combination had a significant impact on volumes. The good thing there is our profitability, as I mentioned, continues to improve. Volumes are looking better. Obviously, the comps are going to be better starting on May. And that's why we expect our goal would be to end up flat by the end of the year. But that is truly challenging at this point, I might say. But we never would have a goal of decreasing volume, even though we've had a tough first 3 or even first 4 months. So what we're been able is to overcome the impact, at least on the profitability side. EBITDA in the last month was level with that last year, considering the reduction in volume. So that, I think that is pretty remarkable. So we've imposed a very disciplined cost optimization plan, We expanded our portfolio of beverages. I mentioned that we made a very comprehensive review of our price pack architecture, very similar to what we did in Mexico with the excise tax in 2014. And we reformulated products to offer, as I already mentioned, more low-calorie or zero-calorie options. And we focus on affordability, price points and key entry packages, returnable presentations. We've increased the number of transactions in Ecuador. That is also very important. Although the volume is down, transactions are growing because we are focusing in smaller packs that are obviously more affordable. And we are making more efficient market investment as we have also the one brand strategy has helped. So we track our share market. We're doing well also in that respect. And as I said, also we are tracking our operational indicators, our coverage of our fundamental SKUs, and all the rest of the operational metrics are improving. So I think we're in a good position to capture a better situation. It might not occur this year, but we are continuing to strengthen our leadership in the long run. And I think we can end up with a year that is very satisfactory in terms of at least our bottom line, even though the volumes are not going to be certainly spectacular. So if that answers the first part, I can let Emilio take care of the second question.
Yes. Thank you, Arturo. Thank you for your question, Alvaro. Yes, well, from the 18.4 billion pesos of debt, short-term debt, as I mentioned, we will refinance to long-term around 17 billion, and in the next 12 months, we'll be paying around 1.3, 1.4 billion pesos. We'll be paying around that amount of debt in the next 12 months. So the rest will be, I already mentioned, some uses of this excess cash as dividend and for projects, new M&A opportunities that we're always looking for in the market, no? So, but basically what we have been refinancing is 17 billion, and the rest will be paid in the next 12 months.
No, perfect. That's clear. That knowing what you'll pay off is very helpful. Thank you very much for the comments on Ecuador as well.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Julie Charles with Bloomberg.
Thanks for squeezing in my question. Just a quick one. On the synergies that you're expecting in the U.S., the 60 to 80 million over 3 years, I'm just wondering how those will be realized. Will it be ratably, you know, equally over the next 3 years, or do you expect it to be more front-end or back-end loaded? Thanks.
Hi, Julia. Thanks for the question. We don't have a detailed plan, but we do expect that, as in every case, that we have a larger share of the synergies in the first half of that period. And that is the goal that we've set internally, at least the goal for the plan so far. We don't want to have a plan that has all the synergies in the third year, that's for sure. Although we don't have a specific number, our internal goal, and we've spoken about that here with our CEO and with the operation at Coca-Cola Southwest Beverages, is that we need to have a plan that, it's going to be spread out in those 3 years, it should have an important impact in the first at least a year and a half. And that is a combination of some of the revenue synergies and some of the savings in costs and expenses. Certainly, in the U.S. is a more challenging in terms of the speed of the synergies as compared to what we've done in other countries because of the way the U.S. system operates. It's a much more integrated network, so decision-making is carried out in a different way as compared to Latin America. So we have considered that, and that's why we are conservative in terms of the timing, but we have identified the projects and we are working right now on the preparation of the detailed plan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Joao with Soros with Bradesco.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. Basically, I have two questions. First one, I know you talk a little bit about the dynamics in Mexico, but I mean, still, I still can't figure out how much of. Sorry, can you hear me? Okay.
Yes.
Just to talk a little bit about market share and also in Argentina, I mean, in terms of categories, are you seeing more opportunistic SKUs in Argentina? I'm hearing a little bit about cans coming back. And also, if you could talk a little bit about CapEx, the CapEx cycle in the U.S., how is it similar to what you're seeing in Mexico in terms of CapEx in terms of revenues? I mean, is it a more intensive CapEx cycle, and a little bit about how you guys are seeing that going forward? Thanks.
Thank you, Joel. Let me address first the market share questions. First of all, in Mexico, even though we've increased prices more than 9%, we continue to gain share in terms of value, which is I think the metric that would be most important, considering that we have, a significant price gap in Mexico versus competitors. And that price gap was increased as compared to the first quarter of 2016. So that gave us a slight increase in value share, and I'm talking of NARTD, although volume share is fairly flat. So that's really important, and that's probably what we're going to continue to balance as we go on, our profitability, certainly our volume, and our value share as we increase prices. So we're satisfied with the situation in Mexico, especially with such a good growth in volume and a good profitability for the business. In Argentina, the situation is different because the economy has been struggling. So we have, obviously, when that happens, the consumer changes to other products, sometimes mixes, sometimes B brands. That's happened in some of our regions in Argentina. So we had to implement specific and targeted strategies, especially some of the provinces in a province called El Chaco and Corrientes, places where there's much less disposable income, and many of the consumers would be attracted to the very discounted brands, not our traditional competitors. And for those, we've launched a specific brands that we also use in Argentina. In the case of Argentina, it's a brand Crush, and that's been very effective in maintaining our share. In the month of March, which is the last measurement, we increased our share in Argentina compared to the last month. So that comes to prove that our strategy there has been effective, and especially, under these circumstances, always maintaining share of volume is very challenging. But we in Argentina, the same thing. We see value share as our main metric, and we are satisfied with where we are right now. So with that, I'll let Emilio take care of the CapEx question.
Thank you for your question. Well, as we announced yesterday, we're planning to invest 10 billion pesos during this year, including the U.S. operation. We're maintaining a ratio of 7% over sales in CapEx overall at a consolidated level. 25% of those CapEx will be for U.S. This year. And regarding the ratio in U.S., it is probable that the first years could be a little bit higher than that ratio, since we have some strategic projects like in-blow molding that will improve our cost structure in U.S. So we have very specific and strategic projects in U.S. But at the end, we believe that the ratio in U.S. will be lower than that.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for very clear.
Thank you. Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Felipe Brigo with MetLife.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for taking my questions. Just a quick one on debt. What is your leverage target for 2017?
Well, as I mentioned, the current debt level net debt ratio is 1.3, and we look for to end the year with around 1.1 net debt to EBITDA ratio. Of course, I'm not including any M&A activity. So without that, we think that we'll end the year between 1 and 1.1 ratio times.
Thanks. But I guess during the year, it may be a little bit up once you consolidate the U.S. operations, right?
Yes. Well, including that, including U.S., that's our expectation.
Okay. Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Felipe.
Thank you. We have no further questions at this time. I would like to turn the conference back over to Arturo Gutierrez for closing remarks.
Well, I just want to thank you for participating in this conference call and for always supporting our company. Please don't hesitate to contact our investor relations team for any further questions. We look forward to speaking with you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.